The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Win for Kirby Smart that we haven't been considering until now. Chuck Oliver Show on Tuesday. Appreciate he stepping in yesterday.
I was on assignment. That's the dentist and the bank and all these errands that you have to run, like, you know, twice a year, as well as a couple other things. So I'd plan it all out, and I appreciate he stepping in yesterday, so thank you.
When I say there may be an ultimate win for Kirby Smart that we haven't been considering, and I don't know that Kirby Smart has considered this, but we were mentioning last week just the gargantuan, the Mount Everest of task that is ahead of Kalen DeBoer. And if you haven't done a big drill down of Kalen DeBoer, maybe you remember back in the day we would have Dave Bartu on, or Chris Landry, and then this guy Fresno, and look at him, he just had some success. And there was a little pop season. There's this guy that we'd never heard of, and we weren't 100% sure how to pronounce his name, but then when we tried to spell his last name the first couple of times, we had to look. But it's Kalen DeBoer. And we saw what he had done at his first stop on the resume. 5 years at Sioux Falls, and you're like, what's that mean? I don't know what that means. Then he went to Fresno, and he took over a team in a pretty tough spot. And in 2020, in COVID, he took over during COVID and went 3-3. That may be cracking the code. He went 3-3 for the Fresno State Bulldogs, who had no budget, no all of that, and COVID, and no money, and testing, and players, and he made it work. He was one of those people who could walk to the cabinet, open it up, and say, all right, I'm going to make some dinner. And he and his staff and the players and the administration, everybody at Fresno figured it out to the tune of a 3-3 season. Folks, that is by far the low watermark of his coaching career. Because the 9-3 year in 2021 at Fresno led to him being hired at Washington, and he took over an absolute disaster from Jimmy Lake. First year 11-2. Last year, you saw what happened. Have we done the accounting? Because I had looked and it had not really dawned on me, but have we done the accounting and really paid attention to Kalen DeBoer's resume? Do we know? Have we done the math? Because Alabama just hired a head coach with a career record of 104-12. He's been nothing but wildly successful. And at this program, about to rain wins in T-Town. And no matter what he achieves in any realistic scenario, he will never be higher than third on their list, and he's got ground to make up on Gene Stallings. I say this under that realm of, I don't know, in 100 million years, who knows how all the seasons unfolded? But under any realistic scenario, for a guy whose record is 104-12 and apparently can just show up at a program that's having issues, lay hands on it. And it's morning in Seattle. It's morning in Fresno. That's just what he does. He's Kalen DeBoer. He's the program whisperer. Except he's not taking over a program like that. He's taking over Alabama, a team that's in the playoffs last year. And he's already been a playoff coach himself. And so this thing looks like it's just going to be, I mean, rocket ship to the moon, and it should be. Under no realistic scenario will Kalen DeBoer ever be better than the third best coach in this program's history. I believe Kirby Smart is already the greatest coach in Georgia football history. Kirby's not eligible for the College Football Hall of Fame yet. He's only been head coach at Georgia since 2016. He still has to put in work to get eligible for the Hall of Fame, and he is already the greatest, I don't know, is it best, most accomplished, whatever. I'm going to say greatest. And I usually try to be very specific in my language. But Kirby, he knows all about the history of the program. He knows about the Butzmir building and who it's named at. Worst name building in college sports, Butzmir. But Wally Butz, I mean, you have to understand what that man was about. And then Vince Dooley, who was the athletic director when Kirby played there and put together his own resume over 25 seasons. And then the other coaching happened. And Ray Goff, who had some success, moved on. And Jim Donnan, who had some success, moved on. And Mark Richt, who had a lot of success, he was moved on. And Mark Richt, who's eligible for the Hall of Fame. Vince Dooley, who's in the Hall of Fame. Folks, Kirby Smart's passed him. And it's not like we're going to take anything away from Vince Dooley, or we're going to take anything away from Wally Butz or Harry Mayer. We're not going to do any of that. I can't tell you a lot about W.A. Cunningham, but apparently he put some great Georgia teams out on the field from 1910 to 1916. I say Kirby has passed W.A. Cunningham. When you take a job at Alabama, folks, you say yes to it, obviously. You take the job. But when you take a job at Alabama, there is a ceiling, and it's kind of a hard one, and you may not need to concern yourself with that sort of long-range, big picture, over the arches of the ages, where I land. But there is something to the possibility that you walk around campus already as the greatest coach versus a scenario where no matter what you do, you'll never be hired in third. Like I said, Gene Stallings, that's a beloved figure. So Kirby Smart continues to just roll along. And the game I like to play, and this is usually just ahead of like media days. This is the end of June, beginning of July. One of my favorite games, and this is just to sort of calibrate, sort of to think. What happens next? What is the next professional transaction for this head coach? Is he hired, fired, or retired? And by that, I mean, is he hired away by someone else? And when that happens, that could be the NFL. That could be another college. You're hired away. You're still working. You just left the job. You got hired by somebody else. Fired, we understand, and retired is Nick Saban. Herm Edwards. Kirby Smart. I'm stuck. And Lord knows, a year ago, Pat Fitzgerald, I would have said, he leads my list. I know he was going to retire there. Like, I don't know, a week later. I'm not kidding, folks. We did this at the end of June. That's about when I get into it. And as examples, I gave Kyle Whittingham and Pat Fitzgerald. I was like, now there are some coaches who we don't need to play this game with because we clearly know exactly how this is going to go. 2 weeks later, Pat Fitzgerald's fired. But I thought we had an angle. And on most coaches, you can look at it like Ryan Day. What happens to Ryan Day next? I know what happens to Ryan Day next. He gets hired away. Somebody hires Ryan Day, and it ain't in college because there's nowhere better than Ohio State to coach in college. Same thing with Kirby. Another school is going to come hire him? No, like the Philadelphia Eagles and all his former players are going to say, Kirby, please come coach us. So that's the one thing going that I have as his next professional transaction. Keep in mind that he is only 48 years old. He is still a really young man. And as I said, his head coaching career is even younger than that. He's got to put in another 2 seasons because you have to coach 10 years to be eligible for the Hall of Fame. He's not even eligible to go to the Hall of Fame yet. So what's ahead for Kirby? That's all speculation about will he go to the NFL? Would he retire there? Would he ever leave for another, you know, whatever. Maybe he's going to let somebody else fail at Alabama and then he'll, quote, go home. Home's there in Athens. But that's speculation about what's down the road. The part that I don't think is much speculation is what's already been achieved, and that is Kirby Smart, after 8 seasons, he's achieved something that a guy with a 104-12 record has no chance of achieving if he coaches there for the next 20 years. So that is the level that Kirby has that program and his own career at right now. Personal opinion, I think he does coach in the NFL, and it's a combination of reasons that, you know, we all know about, and it would be the 48-year-old's version, or 49 or 50 or 51, whenever this would happen, if I was right. It would be his version of what Nick Saban just said. I'm 72 and doing this stuff sucks every day. That would be Kirby Smart's version as a 50 or 51 year old. So I'm not saying it's imminent, but I do think that at his age, like Saban could say, I'm 72, I'm gonna quit. Not often, if you're in good stead and you're successful, not often do you say at 48, I'm walking away. If you got broke off a couple of times, yeah. You can walk away. Like Tom Herman could have walked away. He's living in Boca. Isn't Tom Herman still living in Boca? Yeah. Tom Herman's in Boca. Life's good. So he's like, wait a minute, I can get paid and coach football. I got to have something to do all day. And living in Boca is like pre-retirement. So we live in Deerfield Beach. It has a wonderful Piccadilly. So maybe he's previewing that. But Kirby can't walk away. So his only change would be to walk to the NFL. I could see that happening, but to another school, highly unlikely. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, jump into it next.
To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
I think we'll be a great football team, man. You know, you just have to wait to see, but we're really excited. We got a great group of seniors here. The players here at Florida State, man, they do an unbelievable job embracing the history, embracing the tradition we have here. And Coach Novell, man, he's one of one, man. So it's a pleasure to be able to play for him and play with a group of guys on this team, man. It's been a wonderful pleasure so far.
Late of Clemson via Corvallis. And for a Florida State offense that has seen just about every big-name player any of us can name, I'm talking offensive player, impact guy from the 2013 season, just about any of those we can name, they are either going to be drafted in 2 days or 3 days or 4 days. Just about every one of them. Jordan Travis, bad injury, already was not going to be a... was Jordan Travis going to... Let's go back to kickoff of the North Alabama game. Was Jordan Travis going to be an NFL quarterback 9 months after that game if he wouldn't have gotten injured, in your opinion?
I think he would have been drafted. I don't think he would have been drafted high. I think he'd been part of that group 5th to 7th round. Let's bring in a spare part, see what happens, guy.
He had made tremendous improvement as a passer, as a quarterback. There's a lot in college that means. In the NFL, a quarterback basically means one thing: deliver the ball downfield to your receivers. You can run around. You don't really want to run across the line of scrimmage. Not a whole lot in the NFL. In college, being a quarterback, that can be a big part of it. Jordan Travis was a fabulous college quarterback, but the passing part of it, he really improved on, and it became like it was weaponry. Now, having big giant Johnny Wilson and having Keon Coleman and then having NFL running backs, plural, Trey Benson among, all of that helps. And the approach that Mike Norvell has taken, it's never just the good stuff. I talked about 5 years ago. Jake Spavital was the head coach at Texas State, and I didn't know it was going to be him. I was like, somebody just needs to go ahead and take the plunge so that you don't have to worry about kids transferring. Just put together an entire recruiting class of just transfers. They've already used their one. Now, that isn't applicable anymore. They've already used their one, and Spavital brought in, I want to say it was 23 recruits, and 22 of them were transfers. He's like, all right, we're in. We're Texas State. We got nothing to risk. You would have a gain there back in the day 5 years ago. Now you really have no choice but to sort of play that game. And you don't even get like the upside of it that, hey, we're taking the lead and we're doing it more than everybody else. You kind of have to do it. And then it bakes into it that you then have to re-recruit that scholarship, not the kid. The kid will leave. You can't re-recruit him. He's going to go to the NFL or UCLA or whatever. Let's say, I'm saying you have to re-recruit the scholarship. You have scholarship number 36 out of 85. And previously it would be a high school senior that would then be there for at least 3 years, probably four, maybe five. Now, over the course of five football seasons, how many players do you think occupy scholarship number 36? I bet you it's a minimum of three now. And I'm talking like the higher end impact guys. When you get down to like scholarship 50, 55, 60, 70, some of those guys, I've told this story before. Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech got hired and he was expecting this flood of, he's like, nobody's leaving. They want the degree. It's like, it's a $300,000 degree or whatever. It's like, nobody's leaving. And so you can kind of count on that sometimes. But you, and there are kids a little further down the food trough. They're like, no, I'm staying. I'm good. The impact guys, the upside is you can replace them and get a grown man and you can get an instant, you know, Keon Coleman. The, I'll say not upside is you have to re-recruit, reuse your resources, your time, your money, your humans, all of this on that same scholarship, not after 3, 4, or 5 years, but maybe after 3 months. I mean, we saw it at Louisville. Had a running back, Penny Boone, show up in January. They had used their resources to recruit him in December. They're using their resources to recruit that same scholarship now. So that's the path that Mike Norvell has taken. And to this point, I'll give him credit. It is a lot of more work. And it's really expensive work. Do you know what's easier? Privately, secretly, and the coaches and players never go along with this. They're not part of it. They're out there busting tail. It's for folks in the meeting, before the meeting, the really high-level folks in an athletic department, they have the secret meeting where they decide, yeah, we're actually going to start funneling our resources towards a sport where it's easier and less expensive to win, like basketball. And then you look at the Final Four and you see who? Miami, FAU, San Diego. Look at your Final Four, folks. So that's all out there. In football, Mike Norvell does not get enough credit because all of this is brand new, and I'll be darned if every year, bam, 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 he figured out one of the paths, and his was one of the right ways. A lot of people, there are 15 different approaches to name, image, likeness, and then the portal over the past 3, 4, and 5 years. A lot of different, and I didn't fault anybody because it was all brand new landscape. Whoever charted the course in Tallahassee, they chose the right one, man. It's working. And I believe DJU is actually, he's going to have as good a season as possible for him to have with his skills, his size, now his experience. All of that gumboed together, he's going to have as good a season as it's possible for him to have, no matter where else he would have transferred. I think that is, and he was talking about how comfortable he is in the fit there. So, hey, how's it Tuesday?
You know what's interesting with them, Chuck, is that it's not just, oh, go grab a Keon Coleman for 1 year. That didn't necessarily take an incredible amount of foresight to say this guy's pretty good at football. He'll help us. It's the kids that they got. You know, Jared Verse from Albany was touted coming from Albany, but to not only think, all right, he's good enough to help us, but also to be able to get him for 2 years. They have gotten in. You know, Wilson coming over from Arizona State was not a guy who put up big stats yet. Had him for multiple years. They haven't just grabbed the patch the tire 1 year guys. They have found guys that they can get multiple years out of, and in some cases from relatively obscure places like Fisk coming from the MAC. They have really done a nice job with that. Speaking of transfers, so there's a zillion kids in the portal, but one in particular who's kind of interesting is Jason Zandamela. And for those who are not familiar, this was the top-rated offensive line recruit in the country last year, leaves Florida to go to Southern Cal, goes through spring, says, not for me, I'm coming back east. And so, Chuck, he's expected to visit UCF this week, and the folks who track this stuff seem to feel like, while Florida's trying to get in with this too, they seem to feel like maybe UCF is going to land him. A guy who was 46th overall in the class that just signed this February, or if you want to call it December, however you want to look at it, that class, 46th overall prospect, number one lineman, at least in some people's minds, and this is where, if we're talking about the schools that benefited from the Big 12, obviously anybody from the Pac-12 that got into the Big 12 boat without sinking, that's huge for them. But if we're talking about the group before that, the group that was moving up into the world, the Cincinnati and UCF group, UCF to me always felt like the one best position to capitalize. It's really hard for me to believe, Chuck, that they've got a crack at this kid if they don't have that quote-unquote Power Four status. You look at some of the guys that Malzahn is getting involved with in the transfer market. I think UCF could be a real load for some people to deal with over the next couple of years. And I think that that Big 12 status, them getting that, is going to be enormous in how they got there.
Yeah, and it's no longer a criticism that Gus, I don't know if you were aware of this. You ever, I talked about it a couple of times, but it was a conversation. You could argue and not even really have to argue, just kind of state that Gus during his entire head coaching career has never had a high school quarterback that he recruited to his program develop into an effective, impactful starter, not even Sean White. And that's about the closest. It's all about transfer, transfer, transfers. And that used to be a big knock on him. He can't develop quarterbacks. Well, that's not really the landscape and what you're trying to do right now.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
It's hour one. We're talking about asset allocation.
widgets. We have resources, whether it's just straight cash, homie, or it's human resources, or it's hours, like what the NCAA allows us to use in a particular way. And if you can help someone use their resources to the max, that frees them up to use it in, the leftover resources in another way, whether, again, whether it's people, whether it's time, whether it's money. Want to welcome on right now. Guy who can explain all that. He is College Football Matrix. He is Dave Bartu. Dave, welcome back. How's your Tuesday?
My Tuesday is great. It is very quiet here, and I couldn't agree more with your statement just a second ago. Regarding asset allocation and talking about what being efficient means. And I think one of the biggest things in there, the big word that people really often overlook, is time. How much time do you have recruiting? How much time do you have to coach? How much time do you have to spend with your family? How much time do you have to get out on the road? It's all about time. I mean, every single one of these coaches, it doesn't matter from Georgia to Georgia Southern, they are all trying to compress 30 hours into a 24-hour day. And so ultimately, you've heard me say it 100 times in the show, right? I tell stories with numbers. But the most important thing our numbers can do, the most important thing, it has to do this every single time or it's not advanced analytics to us, is it has to create efficiency. And what does efficiency create? It creates time for something else. It doesn't free up more time. There's only 24 hours, brother.
But you can't create it. Yeah.
No, you can't create it, right? We can't create more coastline. We can't create more land. You know, we can't create more time. But can we use our time more efficiently? That's one of our big goals in telling these stories with numbers, is we are trying to help our coaches spend less time on worthless things or things of lesser value and more time on the important stuff. So if I can take away 1 or 2 hours a week of recruiting, and that coach can have an extra 1 or 2 hours of coaching on the field with the players, it's a win-win, right? I mean, we're working smarter, not harder, on the recruiting side. And we get to coach more, which is, well, really what most of these guys love, except for a few of the, you know, the hired closers when it comes down to recruiting.
So it's interesting you bring up there, because the idea you and I have talked either about this or around it a lot, but the idea that retention is so huge, because I was mentioning before you came on that, like, it used to be you would out of 85 scholarships, you know scholarship number 36, you would recruit whoever filled that and he would stay at least 3 years, if not 4 or 5. You may be filling that slot on your team every year or two now. So retention, the less time you spend recruiting, the more time you can coach. Have you been approached by any program? Have you been thinking about it yourself? Have you found programs that, for whatever reason, do the, quote, best job of retention, and then sought to find what the common thread weaving through those programs would be? Because retention, to me, right now, is one of the keys, like maybe the key in success in college football.
Yeah, there's not enough data out there, and a lot of the data that is hidden, right? You know, so what's retaining a player? Is it emotional factors? Is it just straight money? How much am I making here versus going somewhere else? What's the opportunity? Are we winning football games? How much playing time do I get? I think there's probably a lot of things that go into all of those factors that are creating, you know, all of this movement. So to answer it, I don't have an answer for it, and there's probably a lot of variables there. But I think, like anything else, it's a job, and so you're probably looking at pay and opportunity, right? Yeah. Just like the rest of us, you know, yeah. Something different than you, me, or the listeners out there. It's, you know, if somebody said, hey, I'm going to move your radio stations and double your pay.
Nothing says please like money.
No, it doesn't, because it's a finite window, especially as an athlete, right? I mean, there's only so much there. So it is take what you can get, but there is an inherent risk with it. If you have NFL dreams, I can tell you right now, there is no question GMs, assistant GMs, when they're looking at draft boards, if you've transferred, specifically if you have transferred down in tier, if you can't cut it with the big boys and you've transferred down, that is a red flag. It is so much. If you leave for the money, if you're chasing the money and you're transferring down because you can't cut it athletically or mentally, your NFL dreams are taking big time hits, not sticking it out.
Before we take a quick break and come back, and we're going to talk about college coaching and specifically wide receivers and running backs coaches and myth versus reality, I would want to query you, any opinions about NFL quarterbacks in the coming draft? It's just a couple of days from now, specifically J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix and his knees, Bo Nix. I guess it has to be eye of the beholder. Maybe once you get past Caleb Williams, there's personal taste involved, but any observations or opinions, because you've got history of working with NFL teams.
Can I get Michael Penix brain and arm in Caleb Williams body? That'd be great. If I could go in the
healthy
lab.
Knees.
Right. Just Caleb Williams never elevated his team. He carried the bags. He won a lot of games with a bad defense, but he's got the number one offensive coordinator in college football. That's a guy that, it drives me nuts. And whereas Penix has one of the best records in terms of elevating his team. You know, he elevated at Indiana, got Indiana in the top 25. Look what he did with Washington. I don't know which direction to go there. You and I both know that QB1, the first guy taken, almost always works out, you know, especially with the experience level that Caleb has. So I'm not going to bet against him. He just never elevated the team. So if he doesn't become a superstar, wouldn't shock me at all. But then most of these guys didn't elevate their program. You know, like Penix. Now, one guy, let me give you one guy nobody's talking about. You know about one of my diamonds in the rough. I think it's Spencer Rattler. Tons of experience. Not an elite recruiter. Made weak offensive coordinators look really good. Okay? I love all that stuff. Okay? Here's another guy that did the same thing. You ever hear of Tulane in the top 25 before a couple of years ago?
It's not a regular thing. It happened back in like the 40s.
Right. So the first thing I'm looking at from a quarterback situation is, do they have an NFL-level quarterback that elevated the program to that status? Guess what? They do. They do. He put them in the top 25 the last 2 years. And look at the offensive coordinator. First time never called plays before offensive coordinator. Boom, the quarterback puts the offense in the top 20. Think that's all the OC? I don't.
An NFL quarterback and you're at Tulane, you look down at the play sheet and all the plays are right answers almost.
Right. You know, so Pratt at Tulane is, it's a better level. Who is the guy that was at Southern Miss that made Larry Fedora a ton of money?
Oh, Austin Davis.
There you go. So you look at Michael Pratt. Now, Southern Miss, a lot lower competition level than Tulane. Tulane wasn't even a top half recruiter in the AAC, puts him in the top 25. So there's a guy, speaking of NFL quarterbacks, that's one of the names. There's another diamond in the rough nobody's really talking about, but he's one of the top three guys that has elevated his program with a pretty weak OC. So I'm curious to see where he goes. I do expect him to be drafted. He might be fourth, fifth round gold this year.
Folks, we're talking with Dave Bartu, hour one on a Tuesday. He stops by for a couple of segments. We're going to take a quick break, come back, get into it next with more from CFB Matrix.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Sometimes average is okay, or okay enough. Well, welcome back on right now. He is College Football Matrix. He is Dave Bartu. He says he tells stories with numbers. Dave, tell everybody specifically what you do and maybe for whom. Someone may call you. Who would that be, and what may that person ask you?
Oh, every level. Every level, right? This week it's pretty quiet from the college side. Everybody's out there in the wide open transfer portal going crazy. So don't hear much, but I talk to head coaches, I talk to chief of staff, I talk to recruiting directors now, director of player personnel, NFL GMs, assistant GMs. And now that we are into combine testing, I talk to a lot of high school ADs because we're combine testing every athlete, boys and girls. So we're actually taking our numbers that we've developed at the NFL level and using it to create efficiencies at the high school level. So it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun. Just the whole stratification of watching athletes run through the system now. It's kind of a fascinating to watch it in the data.
Now, when you put enough numbers and enough examples and you're after a particular outcome and there's enough information put in, you can see what those threads are and what is what you said last week, there was one measurement that's 96th percentile is going to work. And so if a kid's in the 4th percentile, you don't offer him a scholarship or you don't spend a draft pick on him. I said when you were coming on, sometimes average or barely above average, sometimes that's okay. In the case of the Middle Tennessee football program, it's Middle Tennessee State. And I don't say that with any sort of judgment, but, like, you can't have really big goals. I mean, the landscape for what you're trying to achieve is sort of limited. It's Middle Tennessee. Well, Rick Stockstill, he hit that target. He was head coach there for 17 seasons. He finished exactly 2 games over. And there was a lot of 7-6 and 8-5 and 6-7. I mean, it was kind of – that was sort of the ride for about 2 decades. I want to ask you, and I like him, by the way, but given what the Middle Tennessee program is, like, I never really looked at it and said, they should want more, they should fire him. First of all, tell me what Rick Stockstill was as a head coach and then what they have now, because Derek Mason is the head coach, if people don't know.
Well, Rick was a little bit of a roller coaster, right? I mean, if you follow Middle Tennessee State, there were some really good ups, but there's also some equally really bad downs. But overall, for his career, he was a plus coach effect guy. He was above average. And there was a period there a few years ago. I think part of it was, wasn't his kid the quarterback there for a while too?
Yep.
And it was rolling. It really was. And then the last 3 years, it just, I don't know if it was the passion, you know, starting to look towards retirement. He'd been doing it a long time. You know, the last few years, Middle Tennessee State had just kind of fallen on the downside of that roller coaster. So, but they are in a coach's conference, right? You coach well, you can win football games. And I thought Rick was, at least for a good period of his career, pretty underrated, pretty under-talked about. And I think a lot of that is because, well, he's at Middle Tennessee State, and maybe he didn't want to leave at all. You know, so when your name, when you tell everybody your name's out there, then, well, guess what? Your name's never out there, so nobody really knows who you are. So now Derek Mason is interesting.
Can I give you a quote? But before you, I want to give you a quote that someone, when he was working TV, someone said, he's the greatest defensive coordinator in the United States. It's like, he needs to be employed somewhere. Now, that's not the same as being head coach and running a program, but as far as DC, he's been talked about as he's as good as you can find in college.
I would agree. He had a run in there when he was at Stanford. He was the only guy that could stop Chip Kelly. Only guy, you know, and it didn't matter what you threw at him. Fast, slow, run game, pass game. He defended all of it. And you saw him at Vanderbilt. I mean, couldn't hire an offense to save his life, you know, but he'd lose games 16-9. You know, and he'd shut down at Vanderbilt. He would shut down high-powered offenses. So the defensive mind is there. It's always been there. But remember what we talked about, the head coach, when he gets fired from being a head coach, what's his next goal?
Be head coach again. Yeah.
Be head coach. You know, could Derek Mason, if he got along with the right guy, right staff, been a national championship-level defensive coordinator? Not even a question in my mind. None. You know, you put him in a lot of programs, top 5 DC in the country. You put him with top 10 talent. Now they're a national title contender. But obviously, Derek wanted to be a head coach.
you know. And so, ironically, it took him right back to the state of Tennessee. So here he is with Middle Tennessee. His hiring process, not too bad. I don't think there was a big fall off overall in the staffing. I think the best thing he did at Middle Tennessee State is on the offensive line, running back, wide receiver coach. That core, that support staff on the offense, took a huge move up for Middle Tennessee State in the offseason. So I think that's the best thing that he did from a hiring standpoint. And then from a mental standpoint, Rick was offensive oriented. Derek is going to be highly defensive oriented and highly impactful. So I expect Middle Tennessee State, put a pin in that, maybe in 2 years, should be one of the top defenses in that conference. And that, because he's at that level, not at the Vanderbilt bottom of the SEC recruiting conference, at Middle Tennessee State, he can win with defense. So I think he's going to be a lot more successful there than he was at Vanderbilt.
All right, I don't know this, and you know, sometimes you tell me, Chuck, that's not my business. That's the school's business. When a guy is clearly, I want to be a head coach again, does that make him slightly more affordable maybe? Because it the payoff is you get to be a head coach again in addition to the paycheck. Or is that not much of a factor?
Well, short term, right? That's short term. Like Gary Patterson would take any head coaching job. At least he would have. You know, there was a period of a few years he was calling everybody. His agent was out there just hammering. Every time a job opened up, I'll take it. I want it. I want to be head coach again. Go. You could have got him on the cheap. But long term, you got to think about it. When you buy these guys out, yeah, you get him on the cheap. But if he's the last 3 years at TCU, Gary Patterson, it's going to cost you a lot of money. Not just the money to bail him out, but to restaff the whole thing and start it over and get the fans excited again and re-recruit. So short term, I would agree with you. You can probably get guys on the cheap because they want the job so bad.
Yep.
But is that really going to benefit you long term?
All right, last thing, and I want a review of Ken Niumatalolo. And I want to tell, and you may not know this, or maybe you do, but he says, opening game of the COVID season, he says, I lost it. We never got it back. He says there was no roadmap. He said, literally, his players didn't make physical contact with another player in practice. Now, he says they come out of the tunnel against BYU. That's the first contact with another human they had. Got beat 55-3. He says it all started eroding. All right. He's at San Jose State now. And that to me is one of those places where, you know, the coaching that can, it's not, you know, Ohio State plays Michigan. It's got, who's got more NFL players. San Jose State is kind of about the coaching more, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you got Mountain West, right? So you got new coaches at San Diego State, right? You got the offensive coordinator brought in from Colorado. You got a new Danielson's new coach at Boise State. Nevada's got a new coach. Fresno's got a new coach. So there's new coaching all over the place. And Niumatalolo there, I think you'd agree with me. There was a period of 3, 4, 5 years there where offensively and defensively, they played really tough football.
Yep.
They're really, really good. But and again, this is a guy that wanted to be a head coach again, and he talked the AD at San Jose State into giving him the head coach job. I really believe that. You know, I mean, it's a veteran interview process, and he said, look, I'm going to bring in a new offensive coordinator. We're not going to run the triple option, and I'm going to restaff this to meet the vision of the AD. The problem is his defensive staff, this was a 22% drop in defensive staff grade from last year to what they're going into now. So San Jose State took a huge step back defensively. They took a big step back offensively in terms of the support staff. Overall, head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, they took a little bit of a step back there, but this is a grand experiment. He's never done this before, so I don't think we can apply what he's done in the past to this because he's trying to run an entirely different setup at San Jose State than he did at Navy.
All right, tell everybody again. We got about 60 seconds. Tell them what you do and how they can contact you. Anyone, SEC athletic director, head coach, a fan, anybody.
Well, always the text line, right? The Chuck Oliver Show is one of the biggest text line users out there, 971 217-8419. It's a downtime right now, so you got a question about schedules and games coming up. Hit me on it. That's what I'm working on right now. I am working on ease of schedule. So I think next week, Chuck, we'll be able to talk about who has the easiest schedule in college football relative to the talent, and that's where your playoff teams come from.
Folks, if an NFL GM or an SEC head coach wants information, they got to give him a check, some fat stacks. He says just text him. That's all you got to do if you're a Chuck Oliver Show listener. Dave, we'll do it in 7 days, brother.
Take it easy, man.
All right, Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix. So that's the truth. We called him, hey, he can't come on today. Why? He's in the coaches meeting with an NFC East team. Okay, well, we'll catch up with Dave because they're paying him and we're not. So you rock with the Eagles or Cowboys, or I think it was the Eagles, but that was just a guess, and he would not tell me. I think it was the Eagles. And this was, what, 3-4 years ago, so that would have been a Jalen Hurts thing, man? That is my opinion. But, again, he keeps his client list kind of to the vest, as he should. So whether it's an NFL team, college program, an individual, even players and agents, those are all the folks who reach out to him to find what will be the most likely scenario to produce success and efficiency and wins and everything else you're after. So I appreciate Dave coming on. All right, we're going to break, come back, hour two next.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.